Are you ready?
Okay, Smokey. Roll 'em. That's silly. Shoot him now! Shoot him now!
I gotcha!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That's Not Quite All, Folks, a Looney Tunes podcast. I'm your host, Mark Hallam, joined by...
And I'm Jordan Schmitz, and in preparation for our next movie episode, we are taking the next 2 weeks to discuss the highs, lows, and whatever the hell you would classify them as, of Tex Avery, a director we've talked about, maybe not as much as we could have or should have, and we're doing some Texas, and these three, I think, are a interesting start.
Yeah, a lot of it's, I mean, yes, Tex was pretty much there from the early days, and that's about it, but these are early. These are, like, really early shorts we're covering today, which we don't usually stuff, go towards, because, as stated previously, we're very much a story-first-centric podcast. So... when it comes to shorts like these, it's very much, these cartoons better be funny, because if they ain't...
they better have things going on, and some of them do, and some don't. And it's good because you get to see, basically, the evolution of what Tex Avery thinks is a suitable Warner Brothers cartoon, from the humble beginnings to the full era where he decides to go as wacky as he wants to be. And some really fascinating things in these, in addition to some fairly racist ones.
So the shorts we're covering today are Gold Diggers of 49, Picador Porky, ending with Porky's Review.
And this ranges from like 35-ish to 41-ish, and it gives us a good sort of range of Tex's run at the studio. The first short that we have here is Gold Diggers of 49. This came out on November 2nd, 1935. All I could find on this day is that a Pakistani cricket player was born and a South African cricket player died. The circle of cricket life. You know.
Yeah.
We really got... a lot of these, it was really hard to find things.
Yeah, it's a very much a nothing sort of day. Yeah.
So, the Gold Diggers of 49, which first of all is a reference to Gold Diggers of, like, the Gold Diggers movies that Busby Berkeley and company were doing at the time. So, like, Gold Diggers of, like, 33 or whatever they were. And they were, it confused me that they titled it 49 before I watched it, because I'm like, are they saying 1949? No, it's because they're going back to the Gold Rush of 1849. That's where both the Minor 49er from the Scooby-Doo cartoons and the San Francisco 49ers get their name. This one was directed by Tex, written by Cal Howard, starred the usual gang of idiots in terms of voice acting pre-mill. Billy Bletcher does a voice role here. Bernice Hansen does a couple. Joe Doherty plays a very early version of Porky. Tommy Bond does some stuff here, too. Yeah, we're pre-mill, but we're getting it done.
And who is our lead?
Beans, yes! The cat. It says it right above the fucking title.
Beans, you son of a bitch! Once again, Beans has slid his way into the show.
Sure. Fine. No, because I knew... we were talking about this before we got on. I knew vaguely this was Beans-related because... in a lot of the articles that talked about I Haven't Got a Hat. They also mentioned Gold Diggers of 49, which had a lot of the same characters as that one. And yeah, so I figured Beans would show up. And also, it literally says it in the credits, Gold Diggers of 49, starring Beans. Like, all right, that's the character you want to lead with. This was Tex's directorial debut and the second ever Porky Pig cartoon. And the idea here was that Tex took two characters from I Haven't Got a Hat and grew them up for this, those characters being Beans and Porky. And again, Beans is clearly the big name below the title. Porky is just the supporting character. He plays Beans' girlfriend's dad, which, yes, your character is a pig and you gave birth and your daughter is a cat. Don't think about it. Don't think about it too much. But yeah, the whole thing is that this is you know, the gold rush of 1949. And there's a really impressive panning shot to establish where we are, when we are, what this town of, what is it, like Goldville. And
it's like Goldville, but
and it's
all
been crushed out.
Because it hadn't had any gold. It's like, oh, damn, we called ourselves Goldville. There's no gold.
Yeah, they're called Ville. But yeah, and so the whole thing is that, like, they all want to go off in search of gold. And a lot of this is just very cute stuff so far, which is like, you know, everybody waiting to hear from where gold is. And Bernice Hansen, as Beans' girl, is doing one of her cute voices again. I mentioned this one of the last times we brought up Bernice Hansen, where as Looney Tunes cartoons went for more actual characters with meat on them rather than just cute voices, they phased out Bernice Hansen and started hiring Sarah Berner more, thank God. Yeah, there's only so much these do for me. But Orky in this one is like three times his usual size.
There's our man, fat ass Porky.
Having one of those giant ass sandwiches from the Scooby-Doo cartoons. Yeah, this is the... When they made the joke in the Lorne Michaels special that Porky let himself go, this is the cartoon that they used, where it's very much just overly large Porky. And this is a very different version of Porky. Yeah, because this is, as we'll find out, Joe Dougherty is using a different version, a different voice for Porky than usual. And it's interesting. But yeah, the whole thing is that Beans comes back into town saying, "Hey, I found gold," but in a much more annoying voice than that. And everybody, of course, runs for the hills. And there's some really awkward early animation things throughout this. Like, they hold on shots far too long versus when they should. Like, there's this shot of the empty bar with the sundae on it for extra 2 seconds after everyone's run off. Like, okay, is a joke going to happen here? No, that just
I think the joke was supposed to be like, oh, isn't it funny? You thought they were at an alcoholic bar. Silly you. They're at a sundae bar. It's an ice cream bar.
Yeah.
Get there's a it? Lot of
No, that's later. The whole thing is that, like, there's a lot of extended shots, a lot of shots that last longer. This is an 8.5 minute cartoon. And if they had maybe lopped off a bunch of those shots, it would have been a normal length, but they didn't want to do that. So yeah, as people run towards town and run towards where the gold is, we get a racist joke where it's two bad Asian, badly done Asian stereotypes in a rickshaw. That's not great.
But it can't get any worse, can it?
No, because we cut through a bunch of different people because we have Porky and Beans going together as sort of a father-in-law son duo team. And I have no idea why they made Porky into a big yahoo kind of character for this, but sure, you do you. Whoa boy or whatever the hell it is.
No, it's Whoopi.
Yeah, that it. Hey, on, was I called?
Hey, Porky.
I'd like to talk to you about Porky Pig. Not here.
That's why Whoopi loved Porky so much. She saw this cartoon and went, "That's my man."
Can that man pull off curves? He says my name like nobody does. Anyway, this is wrong, and matter of fact, this next bit is very wrong, where we have these Asian stereotypes that can't be used because that's offensive, but then we have them go through a cloud of smoke and they become really bad blackface stereotypes, which are bad and wrong, and you can't do them other than to show them 80 years later to say, hey, don't do this. Also, I want to fuck Porky. But don't do this, because that's the wrong thing to do. They have some dialogue as well. I think they were trying to do a minstrel show. That's not a thing you want to do in a 1930s cartoon, or even a 2010s cartoon. It's not a good thing to do. Also, I really want to mount Porky, but that's enough of that.
Okay. You can stop now.
Why? It's so much fun.
No, but, also, I'm down here, would you cut that out? Because I was also getting, like
what,
they
the,
cut
the
back to the... No, the cartoon itself.
Yeah.
Because, like, they cut back, and, like, they're at the, they're all digging, and they cut back to the Asian bad joke, and they're like, oh, they're doing it at the same time.
Uh-oh.
Like they're Siamese.
You want a good, bad joke for them? Have them do it upside down. That's at least a clever joke that hasn't aged well. But they didn't want to do those.
No.
There is an actual Tex Avery gag in this. It takes long enough for it to fucking show up, but because there's a gag where Porky's looking for gold and he finds one piece, puts it in his pocket, and then the hole reaches under him and he's like grabbing himself underneath the ground. And that's a Tex Avery gag because that's dealing with logic and cartoon physics and things like that. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah. The one that got me was eventually Beans goes, hey, bring a rope. I found something.
Yeah.
He brings him up. He found a chest. You're like, oh my God, what could it be? Opens the chest. It's an old book that says how to find gold. You open the book. It's just dig for it. Which, one could argue, is a waste of time. But, like, I kind of like that joke.
I liked it, too.
It's like, yeah, sure.
It's from the Acme school of making things really self-explanatory, like the how to induce a person to jump off a cliff, or how to tar and feather a Roadrunner 10th edition.
Or, and this is a brand new one, actually. This is actually a recent example that I saw online. Why is reading a book? And the book is called What Are You Really Chasing?
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. At this point, the robber swoops in and grabs all of Porky's findings. And the robber is played by Billy Bletcher doing one of his usual kind of voices. We get the reveal of Joe Doherty's full voice for Porky here, and it's a really early attempt. He's not even doing that much of a voice. He's just sort of adding a stutter to a usual southern accent. It doesn't really sound like Porky. And it's really not great.
If you get that bag for me, you can have my daughter.
Really? Now you're giving away your daughter? Okay, that's what interesting. We're going with.
But yeah, there's this chase sequence between Beans and the robber, and this is honestly the best Tex Avery energy in the film.
Where it's the best part of it.
Absolutely. Where you have, I love the animation of Beans shooting the robber's hat to pieces and it sort of shrinks on his head. I also like the bit here where Beans shoots like a whole line around the robber's pants to reveal he's got an iron pan underneath his butt.
Look, man, whatever he's into, it's none of our business.
It reminds me, it's like a sort of like Abe Simpson anecdote. It's like, you know, and I put a cast iron bat under my pants, which was the style at the time.
Yeah.
Something like that. There's a lot of really good animation things where he's shooting rounds and the car just sort of like goes backwards and then forwards. And then the car runs out of gas, so he pours like whatever southern hooch he's got in the car and pours it down the gas valve. I love the animation of the car running on booze and just sort of zooming in a million miles an hour. And there's some really good stuff here. Maybe it goes on for too long, but really good stuff here.
So what you're saying, Jordan, is that Bean has a fast car and he has a plan to get him out of there. Okay. Sorry. Right there.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah, you know, they catch the robber and they get the shipment that Porky was getting. And there's a nice reunion between Beans and the girl. And then, as it turns out, you know, what they saved wasn't even the gold. It was just Porky's lunch. Food. So I will admit that the second half is better than the first because that's where all the good animation and gag energy is. But we are really still in the novelty era of Looney Tunes, and they haven't realized how to properly utilize gags in this. There's very, like, Avery ideas that are cool here, but the characters, the pacing, the story, all minimal, and there's not much going on here, and also the racist shit. So, like, it's not as good as it could be. You're getting hints of what will come about, but it's not really there yet.
Yeah, a racist bullshit aside, I mean, it's 1935. Well, why are we going against the Asians? Why? Where's the fun in that?
Yeah, Pearl Harbor hasn't even happened yet. You're just being spiteful.
Exactly. It's like you shouldn't have to be a jerk. On that side, decent enough cartoon. Like you said, Jordan, the best part was definitely that second act with the climax.
Yes.
Though I think that for a fast car sequence, it could have got a little bit faster. I know there's still a little bit of that, like, waiting around for the guy to have it. Like, just one moment where Porky's walking. He's just walking around the screen. Nothing's happening. And then eventually the car comes and gets him. It's like, okay,
yeah.
We could have cut that. A little too much standing around, doing nothing for my taste. A decent enough effort. Though you can see the building blocks are there for Avery to eventually, like, get better. You know, which,
yeah.
I guess that's humble enough. It's like, oh, see, even the great Tex Avery is frustrated with efforts. Like, ah, oh, that could have been better.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen this with Chuck as well, where it's like, okay, he's starting out and he doesn't completely have it yet, but he gets there.
Which, funny enough, the animators on this were Bob Clampett and Chuck Jones. So
yeah, so, you know, it was a well-stocked room.
Yeah, it's very much everyone is in the room learning how to do this thing.
Pretty much.
Yeah, like that's it's interesting. So it's so I guess as a cartoon, it's good in a historical sense, but as a cartoon itself, it's kind of whatever.
Yeah. So I give it, mostly bopped down because of the racist stuff, I give it a 2.5 out of 5.
Exactly. I'm also giving this a 2.5 out of 5 anvils.
Right. Now, if we want to talk about something with historical significance that's actually better.
Well, so the next one we got here is Picador Porky. Came out on February 27th, 1937. Guards were habit on that day. I had pretty much nothing, so I went with Canada won the World Ice Hockey Championships that were held in London.
Hmm.
What? Canada? Being good at hockey? You don't say.
Yeah, it's almost like they helped invent the fucking sport or something, you know. It's almost like it's the top, you know, all of our hockey players all come from there, you know.
So this short was directed by Tex Avery. No writer was credited. Regard to any notes about this cartoon, this is the first cartoon to feature the voice of Mel Blanc. He performed the voice of one of Porky's friends when he gets drunk, and several incidental characters.
Yeah, there's a few voices in here that I thought were pure Mel, other than just the guy he was hired to do. Because I feel like they hired him to have him do the La Cucaracha bit. And then they kind of went, okay, what else can you do, kid? And so he just started doing all the incidentals. Yeah. And
this also kind of ties into the story, he would say. He had the story when you go on talk shows about how he got the role. And the story goes that he went to the guy
who was in charge. It was Schlesinger Cartoons.
Right.
And he was in charge of hiring voices. And I said, look, won't you give me an audition? Listen to me. He says, no, I'm sorry. We have all the voices we need. I came back in a couple of weeks. I said, won't you just listen to me?
Right.
Says, sorry, we have all the voices we need. Well, I was as persistent as he was, and I kept going back every 2 weeks to this guy for a year and a half, and he gave me the same story, we have all the voices we need. Finally, this guy died. I laughed, too. So I went to the next man in charge. His name was Treg Brown. And
right.
Treg said, sure, let's hear what you have. And I auditioned for him. He said, would you do it again for the directors?
Right.
I said, sure. And they got a kick out of it. One of the directors said, I have a cartoon coming up with a drunken bull.
Do you think
you can do the voice of a drunken bull? It was my first assignment. I said, yeah, I think so. He said, what would he sound like? I said,
well, he would sound like it was a little loaded, and it was looking for the sour mash.
Which I don't think that's what happened. I think I fired or something, but, you know, it's more funnier to be just up and dying.
Yeah, that's a little funnier. Yeah.
I knew that story going in. There are people getting drunk, and there are bulls in this. There isn't a drunk bull, however.
There is. There's a drunk guy dressed as a bull.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. But
maybe they were thinking of the more metaphysical, like, idea of it rather than just a drunk bull. You know, it's more complex than just a drunk bull.
That being said, I mean, that does confirm that this was the short. It's like, oh, there's a bull. Yeah. People get drunk. This it fits in with the timeline. So
absolutely.
So, yeah, this is Mel's first go around.
Yeah.
So the animation, by the way, was credited to Chuck Jones and Sid Sutherland. So we begin this cartoon with some words.
Yeah.
Which makes it ironic that there's no writer attached to this cartoon. It's like, who wrote these? We don't know.
We don't know.
The opening states, slumbering peacefully neath the warm caresses of the noonday sun lies the sleepy little village of La Rosita. It presents a scene of serene quietude and beauty as its inhabitants enjoy their midday siesta preceding their annual bullfight. The solitude is broken only by the occasional strains of a soft guitar.
And it cuts to pandemonium.
And it just rips open mass hysteria.
Everybody fighting and now granted this isn't
granted this isn't
the greatest portrayal of Mexico here, but it's very I like the subversion of just springing in. It's like, okay, we're going to go in very softly. You know.
Exactly. Yeah, and like pretty much my reaction to watching this is, who needs story and logic? Well, all you need is wacky animation, because that's actually what this opening is. It's very much like craziness and complete tomfoolery.
Yeah.
So, Porky comes to town and sees that there's this bullfight going down with a win of $1,000 is being held. So, with his two accompanists, they move to rig the event are pretending to be a picador and the bull.
Yeah.
So they go into a costume shop. They get they put you as a picador. The friends dress up as bull. And they just leave, get out of the costume like, it's us!
Yeah. Telling the audience, oh, don't worry, it's us.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
So people enter the arena as Porky sneaks in his false bull. And it is here where we see a real bull and the first utterance of Mel Blanc. I instantly recognize this because the bull is being put in and the real bull is there. And the bull is like in love with the fake bull.
I love that we plant the seed for that early.
Yeah, and just goes,
That's Mel, all right.
Behold, the first utterance of a cartoon legend. A bull being horny.
Sure.
That's right somewhere.
From humble beginnings.
Exactly.
Yeah, but no, I like that they do all this a little setup without really the audience realizing it's set up where it's like, okay, the bull is somewhat attracted to this fake bull. And also like this fake, like they're doing all these like really clever story things where it's like, okay, the fake bull, there's a whole barrel of wine there and they all get completely hammered and go missing. And I like the animation of just like how like crazy they go when they get really hammered.
Oh my god, I love this so much. The bottom half of the bowl gets completely plastered off the strong stuff, and just the hiccups and the going up and down, up and down, up and down, and they leave the cage and they just leave the cartoon for a little bit essentially to get so fucking plastered.
Well, the hiccups are also very clearly Mel. What's great about this cartoon is that Porky is unaware of most of the things that happen, so that he's still expecting his two mates to come out as the bull. And then, of course, his two mates go missing, and the guys backstage are like, oh my god, we lost the bull. Here, we have the backup bull, the real one. And so Porky goes face-to-face with the real actual bull that comes out. And for the first few moments, is like, hey, you know, go easy on me. Thinking it's his friends. And I like that as a hook for this cartoon, where Porky isn't sure whether or not his friends are in there, whether or not it's a real bull.
There's some good bits here. I like how, like, the bull just completely teleports into the cave like it's a magician's act.
I loved that.
Like, ah,
that surprised me and impressed me. I'm like, well, where the fuck did he go? And I love that we don't really know how it works.
Yeah, which also had me going like, oh, is it over now? Like, he dun, won, dun, right? Dun, like, dun. He got rid of the bull. What now? The bull eventually gets seen out of the cave. And then, okay, this is the one gag that I didn't quite understand. Where Porky's like, oh, bad boy, comes over, takes out plungers, puts the plungers on the bull. As the plungers, like, what the hell? Takes off the plungers and, like...
Well, I like the animation of the bull trying to get the one off his face and it just sinking
down. Yes, that's, like, the one part that I'm like, okay, for... I get that. I just didn't quite get, like, why we had to go there. You know, it was a little, like,
it was
okay,
silly.
Sure. And that's a lot of what this cartoon is. A lot of this cartoon is very silly.
Not that there's anything wrong with that whatsoever.
No. So, during the heat of the moment, Porky's friends come out drunk as hell, singing La Cucaracha. Which also means this is the first song Mel Blanc has ever sung for Warner Brothers, which is really fun.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha, play it on the old guitar. La cucaracha, play it in the police yard. La cucaracha, yippee, play it on the old guitar. La cucaracha, play it wherever you have to be. La cucaracha, yahoo! La cucaracha, play it on the old guitar. Yippee! Play the old cucaracha. Play it any place you are.
And he's great.
Yeah, it's perfect. It fits so amazingly.
Yeah.
So, it's here where, as Porky's shocked expression, he looks at his friends, looks at the bull, looks at his friends, opens the bull's mouth, looks inside, it's like, it's like,
that was another Mel noise, where whenever he goes into his mouth.
Yeah, just, oh shit, as they run, and I love this little detail of they run around the whole frame of the cartoon to start running, which is fantastic. So they're running around the frame as round one comes to a close. Gotta separate the two. Even the bull's like, ah shit, okay, fine.
Yeah, whatever, yeah, you know. I love the gag right in between there where the bull is just calling his parents. It's like a full boxing ring thing where he's like, Mom, no, I'm doing great. Don't worry about it.
So the match begins again. Also, the timekeeper gets whomped on the head. Lots of fun.
Very silly, yeah.
As they're doing more chasing, as Porky runs into the safety zone. And he's confident. Like, you can't hit me then. And the bull's like, darn. So the bull just stands there humming to himself.
This is what I mean with the gag work. This is what I mean when it's like, okay, it takes him a while to figure out what it actually needs. But now that he knows what it needs, it's like, okay, now they're everywhere. Like, the safety zone bit I thought was excellent because it was just, you know, it's just the timing, just waiting for him to peer around, waiting for him to come behind, and, you know.
And then I just did a little stammers from Porky as the bull just lifts up the safety zone.
Yes.
Like, out of here. As he runs by his friends, as the friends are like, hey, I got an idea.
All
so
the way
we just cut over to them behind this stand, I guess. As they're like, hey, and then they flirt with the bull. It's like, hey, over here.
They got back in the bull costume and seduce the bull. That is a great writing tactic of working that hook in early.
And I love that they have bats. I don't know, just like, okay, we're just going to beat the shit out of the bull. Oh, God, I love the timing. That's just like, ba-da-da-da-da. So eventually, the friend, just up as the bull costume, come out to thunderous applause as the bull just goes right up to Porky, winks at him, and then just plays dead.
Yes, I love that.
Just plays dead. It's like, I give up. You win. And the judges give him the thousands of dollars. And then eventually the real bull comes around.
Yeah. And then it's like, all right, just, you know, all right, that's not going to work. He runs away, comes back, gives the bull the money again, and then runs away.
And we end with the bull in a, I do not believe this is Mel Blanc.
No.
Well, imagine that.
What a revolting development, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, man, this is just silly, man. The over-the-top characterization of the bull, the gags had a sense of insanity that I really tuned into. My only issues is that I think Porky could have had more of a personality. He's very much just in there as a vessel for gags, which is fine. But, you know, if you're in a character piece, you want to have your character have some personality. That's pretty much my only complaint. Maybe the opening could have been cut down
a little bit. Yeah, the opening really should have been cut, because that's where all the racist stuff was.
Yeah, and not to be rude, the moment in the opening where it was a bunch of guys around a child dancing, did that give you the ick?
There were a few moments where I was like, should I really be watching this? And that was kind of one of them. I mean, really, that's... I mean, there's a lot here that's really good. Again, the gag mentality, the concept of the story, just the fact that Porky isn't sure which bull is the right one, that's all really good. There's a lot that's really in place, but it's just the opening stuff that chips away at it a little bit for me. Not entirely, but just enough where I'm like not exactly proclaiming this to be a classic. It's very, very good, but not perfect.
All right, so I'm going to give this an anvil rating of 3.5 out of 5 anvils.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm giving it. If it weren't for the opening, I'd give it a 4, but 3.5. And we go from if it weren't for the opening, I'd give it a 4 to if it weren't for the ending, I'd give it a 4. Porky's Preview. This is one that we've seen clips from on many Golden Collection and documentary and things like that. So the historians are very aware of this one. And for a number of reasons, it's good that they are. This one came out on April 19th, 1941. I found a cool theater one on this day.
Huh.
On this day, Bertolt Brecht premieres his play Mother Courage and Her Children in Zurich. I've read Brecht. I had a professor I took theater histories with in college who described Bertolt Brecht as the original Nazi puncher, because this was right after the viral clip where the Nazi asshole got completely punched in the face in the middle of the interview.
I remember the greatest things. I remember that.
Yeah, and so he would basically write. This is the very first class of the year where he's bringing up some of the heroes that we're going to meet in the course, and he brings up Bertolt Brecht, the original Nazi puncher. And I always remember that because I've read Brecht, and Brecht was very good at writing about anti-fascism and about sort of like morality plays and things like that without being overly like while being subtle about it. And right. So I haven't read Mother Courage, but I know his stuff. So that's pretty cool. Avery directed it. Dave Monahan wrote Porky's Preview. Voice talents of Mel Blanc and Sarah Berner. Any other background that's important about this?
Yeah, thing? So no, it's so funny. We covered like the first Tex Avery directed cartoon. This is the last Porky Pig cartoon Tex Avery directed, as well as the last black and white Looney Tunes cartoon that Tex would ever direct. So this is very much like near the end of his tenure, pretty much. I mean, like, yeah. I'm getting a little bit tired of this. I kind of want to do more crazy shit. So it's around that time.
Yep, but. You know, this is, I like that we got to throw a 40s one in here because it's a very stark comparison to the way, even just the tone of some of the 30s ones, because getting into this one, it's, you can see that where the jokes come from and where the gags come from is just a little different, because the whole thing is that it's a premiere of a movie and it's all these people coming to the box office and it's all these gags coming here, and they're a lot more pronounced, and it's a lot less about cuteness and more about like just characters, about and it's allowing to be as subversive as the Looney Tunes were at this point. Like, you have a kangaroo as a ticket taker and he accidentally rips off a guy's hand.
Yeah, okay,
I love that. Or you have Mel Blanc the skunk, Bugs Bunny the skunk, essentially, who's trying to get a ticket in here despite being a skunk, and goes,
"Hey, how much to go in?
The charge is 5 cents for you.
Gee, that's tough. All I got is 1 cent. Get it?"
I loved that. God bless Mel.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he just sort of sneaks in the back. So, once we get Porky in this, what essentially this cartoon is, Porky's Preview, is a series of blackout gags under the guise of Porky animated and drew these. So, it's essentially excellently animated renditions of child's drawings. And from that novelty, it's honestly really impressive to see how the animation works here, because despite it it's supposed to look bad, but the animation is incredible.
Yeah. Also, some of that I like from the beginning is that when Porky does cut and introduce the cartoon, in the back of my mind, I kind of went, so this is what the Mickey Mouse Club would have been if Warner Bros. Got there first.
Yeah, pretty much.
So just a bunch of kids in a movie theater wearing demonic pig masks. Like, oh, that's supposed to be charming.
Yeah.
Nope, that's nightmare fuel. But I don't know, it's 1941, and they by this point they mastered, okay, this is how our opening titles go. And then so in this cartoon they're like, okay, Carl, and this is on the CD, the Carl Stalling project, what's called. It's on the CD of the parody of Looney Tune music from this cartoon, and it's legitimately Carl Stalling taking the piss out of himself.
Yes, it's so fucking I love funny. That.
It's just a really
It just
bad.
Sounds like a bad version of the merry-go-round broke down.
Which, the merry-go-round broke down. It's a very easy song to do on piano. It's just, like, it's literally...
Apparently not for Porky.
But yeah, just, that's so damn funny. But yeah, we get these line drawings, and they're, I mean, I didn't write a lot of doubles down for these, unfortunately, but like, a lot of it is just, hey, here's these characters doing these simple set-to-music bits. And it's very simple, but because all our animators are trained very well, it looks incredibly smooth and vivid. Like in the backgrounds especially.
Well, the backgrounds are, like, they're very crudely drawn, but they're still at least what this, you know, like there's something incredible about this train doing Looney Tunes, like, leg-extending bits, while behind him is just this really badly drawn, crude skyline and horizon, and it works despite being one of the lowest forms of animation, because the people behind it are still great animators. Like, I think my favorite bit in this is the bit with the soldiers marching and then meeting each other in the middle and marching upwards. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah. The one that I wrote down here is the circus one with all the animals, because oh, yeah. When they cut to the elephants, some Dr. Seuss looking elephant designs there.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
was Ted in that?
I mean,
day?
This was around the time they were doing stuff like Horton hatches the egg. So,
just Ted Geisel was in the studio one day, going, "Hey, fellas, let me draw this elephant for you. Here, it's for free."
He just does it when they're all at lunch break. He's like, "Okay, they're all gone. Let me do some of my stuff," and then they have to run back in and go, "No, there he is! Get him! He's trying to make his stuff Seussian."
Oh, no! Or like he's drawing in that Chuck Jones, like, "Hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just drawing these images. Really good. Thank you. Let's talk in like 20 years." "Okay, sure, sir."
Noah, is there anything you can tell me about the next 5 years of world events? No.
No, why?
No, I just, you know, if there's anything that you could predict that might happen, that we might be able to, you know, warn people about? No, no, nothing off the top of my head. All right, well, you go ahead. Ay, ay, ay. But yeah, also the gag I caught in here was the horse racing one where they have all the horses going at full speed and then you have the one lounging back and he does an arrow and says Crosby's horse because Bing Crosby very famously bred horses.
Oh, and okay.
Why didn't he sue over this one? Like, hey, buddy, what are you trying to say? Are you saying that I'm a lazy bastard? Those horses aren't worth a damn? I guess I'm going to have to sue you for all your money.
Also, I love how after the horse bit, because every time he cuts to the next segment, he puts in the corner like the cast.
Yeah.
I love how one of them is just like, you, me, the horse. Like it's written, the horse. Written badly. It's like, yeah,
okay. Wasn't that the name of Zooey Deschanel's bad? You, me, and the horse? It's she and him. I know it's she and him. I'm making a joke.
It's she and him.
I know. But yeah, the some of the dance bits, the skirt falling is definitely a preview of some of the stuff that Tex would do in MGM. I think the most indicative part of this is the part where you can see Porky crossing out and starting over on the one dance sequence.
Yeah, the Mexican hat, like,
okay, dance. Can't do that. Let's just have him go all over the place.
So it's at this point in the cartoon that I'm like, hey, this is pretty good. It's really fluid. And like for just simple animation, it's so good. And then you see grand finale, like, okay.
Hello, I'm Whoopi Goldberg. I'd like to talk to you about this part of the cartoon.
That's the thing.
You see, this part of the cartoon, there is more not only blackface, but it's someone doing an Al Jolson impression and going mammy a lot. That is not the kind of thing we want to have in cartoons from 1941 or even 2021. Because that kind of thing is prohibited, and we can only reproduce those so people can learn not to do them back in the bit. Well, also, where's Porky? I want to fuck him.
Oh, yeah. Porky is barely in this cartoon, by the way.
Yeah.
It's going pretty brief. It's like, he's in, like, 2 seconds.
Whoopi just watching this to be mad at the racist bits and going, come on, where's my boy?
Where is he?
Where's my boy?
Where is that pigskin son of a bitch?
Bring out the pig.
We want the pig. Also, comments are also said at your local JCC.
It took me a second.
Bring out the pig. Oi, bring out the pig. Oi. Oi. Okay. So what we're trying to say
is... So this bit is very racist.
Yes, that's what we're trying to say here. It's
well animated. I like the rain cloud that keeps passing over him, and that's very well animated. It's this whole minstrelsy Al Jolson thing where he's singing the I'm gonna get out, I remember, you know, that one. I do it better than he did. And it's just a very... badly stereotypical blackface thing, and it's not great. And
it's not funny.
It takes
either.
The wind out of a lot of this cartoon.
It's not even
no, it's
funny.
Not.
Like that's all cartoon. Like, well, this is good, vivid, funny animation, and here's this. It's like, okay, that's your grand finale. Like, ideally, I mean, again, this is what I would have done, but maybe the grand finale is just like. All the characters throughout are just on the same screen, and it's like chaos, and they wham into each other, and then the screen like falls off or something. I don't know. Like go big.
Yeah, that would be a better ending.
Go big with it. Don't be like, and now we're going to do racist shit. It's like, that's not
fun. And now Al Jolson. So.
Anyways.
So that happens. Yeah. And the ending of this cartoon is still great because Porky goes out and goes, hey, what do you guys think? And everybody's left with the skunk who's applauding.
Which is a great ending. That's a great bit. Like, it ends strong. Yeah. Kinda. It's like, I don't know.
It's just that racist bit is just hard to swallow.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the problem with all three of these, really. It's just all of them have something racist that just makes it very hard to enjoy them fully. I don't know if that's a Tex thing or a 30s and 40s thing, but it's just there. So the overlong racist bit has forced me to take points off, but this is a truly fascinating idea for a blackout short. Using an unusual Bridger Porky's childhood drawings to do some low-effort but high-quality animations. It's simple, but it does so much without needing detail and tells a story within itself. I wish it hadn't have done the Jolson bit, but aside from that, it's really damn good. And it's, like, thought-provoking.
Yeah, it's a great animation demonstration of the Avery unit at this time. Very simple in nature, that's the whole point. The old Jolson thing stinks. It just does. Like, why is it even funny? Like, you've got to do something with it. I don't fucking know. But,
it's just bad.
Yeah. But, like, everything else of it is so good. You know, it's... This, I would say, is definitely a goddammit, why'd you do this moment for me? On the same level of Tweety and the Beanstalk and stuff like that. It's very much like a goddammit, you had us. We could have given you so many points for this, but then you did something stupid.
Yeah, and that's not a great way of going about things. No. Yeah. Against my better judgment, this gets a 3.5 out of 5. I would give it a 4, but it wanted to be racist. So
yeah, I'm also giving it a 3.5 out of 5.
All right, we were at least on the same page today. So
yeah, darn. All right, let's see what you guys had to say about these Avery classics.
So we have Looniest Tunes, which is a pretty cool Twitter user. Very nice. Good to see that we have another Tom and Jerry fan here. I'm kidding. Looniest Tunes says, Porky's preview is great. It's definitely one of those WB era Avery shorts that feels on par with his later output. Yeah, I would say so myself, actually. In terms of just how inventive and world-breaking the whole thing is, though I'll never know why he directed two random black and white cartoons in the 40s. Because he could. Because, you know, other people were doing things with color, and maybe just Tex felt, you know what, I don't need color. I'm fine with just these black and white units. You know?
And then Frank Tasha looked at him and went, wait, we can still do that?
Yeah.
Well.
Some of my favorite Tashman cartoons are the ones in black and white, honestly.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I have a comment here from Key the Drummer from Fifi.
Fife.
Fife. Fofo?
Fife.
Fife. Fife. Who says, Gold Diggers was a weird one since they hadn't worked out Porky by that point. I think it was Bean's father in that one. Father-in-law. Yes. Father-in-law. When they worked out his final design, it had frilling or a clamp in the director's chair. That's when 30s Porky got good.
Yeah.
Because that's when they gave him actual character.
Yeah, here he's just awkward and he's a side character for Beans who has kind of nothing... And it's not where the character should be. But it would get there, and it would take cartoons like Gold Diggers existing to get him in the right direction. Media Central UK, which means like we have listeners in the UK. That's weird. Says, I have something to say. Picador Porky is a classic. Not only was it Mel's first ever Looney Tune, he voiced the drunken bull there. It was also one of the last tunes to have Porky voiced by Joe Doherty, one of the best Porky shorts after Porky and Wackyland. Yeah, we liked that one. There was a lot of good elements to that one, especially Mel as the bull.
Mel just doing a whole tour de force of like, here's what I'm capable of doing as a voice actor. And Warner Brothers went, that's great. Joe, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Also, I'm just realizing I'm pissed off I didn't make this joke during the episode. Picador Porky is also probably a line from Porky Pig's appearance on Let's Make a Deal. Monty Hall going, Jesus, Porky, Picador! There's other people in costumes we're waiting to throw on here.
I don't know what I'm more fascinated by. That you pick the original host of Let's Make a Deal and not Wayne Brady... Known Who's Line improv comic and actor.
Because when I think Let's Make a Deal, I think Monty Hall. Because there is the Monty Hall problem, which is, you know, the psychological, you know, do you want what's in front of you or do you want what's behind door number two, which you can't see? And do you want to make that gamble? That's a whole thing, the Monty Hall problem. And that's why I went with that. Also, because I have watched my fair share of Monty Hall Let's Make a Deal episodes. I'm weird. But Wayne's fucking awesome on there, so, you know.
I like Yeah, like it's Wayne and Jonathan. Yeah. So it's like it's like, oh, this is what they do on their off time. They do this fun little game show where everyone's dressed up in costumes. Like it's fun.
It really is. Between that and Drew doing Price is Right, it's nice that you have these sort of low-key comic guys doing modern game shows. You know, I kind of dig that.
Yeah, that's one thing that I really loved at college was I would have morning classes. So going to the student hall, and I'm like, they have the TVs on. And sure enough, they're like, people are watching The Price is Right. They're like really deeply into watch Price is Right. And given that show holds up amazingly. Like the night version was on a couple weeks ago. It was just on. I watched it. I'm like, we really invested in this.
Drew's great at it.
I really wanted to win.
That's nothing because the show they had playing at Purchase, they would have like during the daytime, when I would get lunch, they would have the TVs on. Like they would have shows on during the night and things, but the daytime they would just have whatever was on the channels. And so a lot of times we got the Harry Connick Jr. talk show. Yes, Harry Connick Jr. had a talk show, and it went about as well as you might think. I'm shocked that never became an SNL sketch. It's like, hey everybody, I'm Harry Connick Jr. I've got my line of has-beens waiting for you. We're going to talk about some movies they're doing, and I'm going to play some music. It's Harry Connick Jr. This is the Harry Show. You know, just I could write it. They could put it on the show.
It's almost amazing how the Kelly Clarkson show is doing so well, considering that Harry Connick Jr. had a show.
Harry Connick Jr. never won American Idol. He may have judged on American Idol, but he never won it. By the way, in case you forgot, Harry Connick Jr. was a judge on American Idol for 2 seasons.
Oh, yeah. That was with J-Lo, right?
Yeah, J-Lo, it was the Harry Connick Jr., J-Lo, and Carl Urban.
Oh, that weird season.
Yeah. You have another comment.
So we have a comment here from the Pemmy, Chrissy, and James podcast at PKNJ Podcast on Instagram, where they say, well, James honestly says, there's Taking the Piss, and then there's Porky's Preview.
Mm-hmm.
Tex would never not be a rebellious spirit, as you both have documented over the podcast, all the way up to the brouhaha around the release of MGM's Symphony in Slang.
Mm.
Yeah. But this, paying a cartoon of stick figures was a whole different level of cojones. In the early days of late years on Nickelodeon, it would always be a massive relief to get an old black and white Tex Avery short as opposed to Bosco or Buddy.
Yes.
You know, anything is better to watch.
Especially than the Avery stuff. At least you get some meat on it, you know, instead of just some bland shit like Bosco or Buddy.
However, when doing an image search to make sure this was the cartoon I thought it was, since it has been decades since originally watching it, I came across a mortifying caricature of a person of color. The Al Jolson ending. You know, the thing that stopped us from giving this a perfect score. It's the vastly unfortunate flip side of Texas' anything to get a laugh mentality. And while the amateur historical documentarian in me knows we can't ignore it, the animation fanatic side of me wishes it had never been that way in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Yeah.
We've had our fair share of cartoons that we've talked about that we liked up until the point where you realize, oh, yes, it's the 40s, and they still are racist about things that we've already sort of talked about not really doing. And that's not the worst of the ones we've seen recently, but it ain't great, and, you know, wish it wasn't there.
It's no China Jones.
Oh, my God. Mark has been... the new Blu-ray came out a couple of days ago, and Mark has just been agape about what China Jones did.
Because, like, you hear about China Jones, you're like, oh, there's this really bad ending where Daffy goes against the Chinese or whatever. I'm like, okay, that's pretty bad. And that's how I put it on. And, I mean, good remaster, it looks nice. But then, right from shot one, it's Mel as Daffy, and he's added a Chinese accent to it. A tone, so and like from the get-go, and like given, yes, it's based off a show of that time that nobody fucking remembers. I'm sorry, no one remembers what was it, China Smith, I think is what the show was called. I don't fucking know. Like, it's another McKibson came into the studio after a hangover one day and went, oh, I gotta think of a cartoon. Let's adapt this fucking Chinese show. We'll get some laughs out of it. And it's not funny. It's not funny.
Yeah.
We may cover it one day. I don't know. Maybe.
But thank you all for your comments. We appreciate it. And we hope you enjoyed this week's cartoons and this week's episode.
Before we get to what we're covering next week, I would like to take this opportunity to thank our Patreon subscribers. That's right. We have a Patreon. If you didn't know about it, you know now. On Patreon, you can subscribe to That's Not Quite All Folks and get plenty of goodies, such as commentaries, bonus material, full uncut episode logs, and lots of fun stuff that you will get the opportunity to have at a $1 level or a $5 level. And I would just like to thank our current patrons, including Andrew, Triscrew, James Irish, Sam Adams, the person, not the drink, my cousin Neil, and Judy M., for giving to this wonderful podcast. And if you'd like to be a part of that, go to patreon.com/TNQAF. Trust me, it'll be worth it.
So for next week, we are going to be taking a break from our Tex Avery coverage. I know, we just started. Ain't that something? But we're going to be looking instead at a cat and mouse team that one could argue had some influence from Tex Avery. And that it was from MGM.
Mark is reaching. We're doing the Tom and Jerry movie as a commentary.
Yeah, we're doing that. We're doing the 90s Tom and Jerry movie as a commentary. The continuation of our They're Coming to Get You, Hanna-Barbera commentary series.
Yes. This is a interesting one. I mean, not exactly for the quality of the final project, but it's interesting in that there are some revelations in this I was not expecting.
Boy, were there. Yeah. To put it bluntly, we got a bad one, folks. The movie.
It's terrible.
Is bad.
It's terrible.
It's not a good movie, and you get to hear our live
I'm looking forward to the one we're doing after this one.
Oh, my God.
When you figure out what that is, that says something. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, it's definitely our most, like, okay. You know, like, for our Jetsons commentary, we were like, oh, maybe this is bad. And then we grew up to love it. This is...
Yeah!
This is... We heard it's bad. We've seen a review that said it's bad. And nothing prepares you. Like, just sitting down and watching
it. How bad it is.
Because, oh boy.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Stay tuned for that. And then, after that, in 2 weeks, we're doing... some Tex Avery MGM shorts.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I don't think Mark has come up with which ones we're doing.
No, it's too.
Just assume that by that point, we'll know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You guys will know on social medias, you know, what shorts we're covering, because comment on. Yeah. So stay tuned to our social media to know what shorts we're covering. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yes.
So, shorts you're covering next week are Blitz Wolf, the first Tex Avery short read at MGM, Dumb Hounded, the first Droopy Dog cartoon, and ending with Symphony in Slang. See you next week. So, that's the end of this week's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow me at MarkHalem1995.
And you can follow me at TallGuySchmidt.
If I keep up with the podcast, give your thoughts for next week's show. You can follow us at that_Looney, both on Twitter and Instagram, or type in the podcast title, We Are the First Result.
You can also find our podcasts wherever podcasts are readily available. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Player FM, Amazon Music. We have a YouTube channel where we post clips from episodes and shorts from episodes that also go on our TikTok account that we have for some reason. Also, if you want to support the podcast financially, you can find us at www.patreon.com/TNQAF and have some fun.
Yes. In fact, over on the Patreon for next week's commentary, you can watch the movie with our commentary running underneath it.
If you want to watch the movie for some reason, you can
do that.
Yeah, you
know, if you want to do that, that's a very good reason, actually. It's probably the best way, honestly, to get through that. Just listen to us being tortured.
If we're helping you out, yeah.
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 All right. So, till next week, I'm Mark.
And I'm Jordan, and I'm going to go get trashed and wind up in the back of a bull costume. Arrivederci.
Just another Monday night for you.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, Jordan, you have a problem.
I know I have a problem, but I'm not going to let you stop me.